Let me see it. Is it cute?
Yeah, it's so cute.
Send it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Okay. Look what I just posted. Brunch with these two dum-dums.
Oh my gosh, so good. Is this good? I said Sunday Funday with these idiots.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. So, so cute.
Okay, so cute. Look what I just posted. Eating crap with these sacks of if they died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. So cute.
Wait, what the hell?
You called me a dum-dum and she called me an idiot.
Yeah, when you post a pic of yourself where you look really cute, then you have to say something a little self-deprecating so it doesn't look like you're just bragging.
Oh, all right, this is good. Okay. Slapping down some pig with these fat and I'm the fattest of them all. If I died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. Load my freaking lard carcass into the mud. No coffin, please, just wet, wet mud. Bay.
Jesus, Brenda.
All right, I got ya. Gulping down some pig with these bags of meat. Sunday fun day with these pig b****s. Hope nobody gulps us.
So, are we the pig b****s or the bags of meat?
Okay, let me try another one. Sitting here with two bona fide pieces of hog b****. They're mad because I won best hog at the hog snarfing contest. But I'm not mad because we're all loads of beef sitting on the side of a highway getting our butts sucked by flies. I tagged you both in that.
Why?
Why are you guys bullying me?
TBTL.
Maybe he saw his reflection and thought, I'm flying in hot for that hottie.
It's like your own mini garden. And, well, now that you think about it, it's kind of fun seeing how good it grows. It's kind of like, you know, kids. Like, it's kind of like kids growing up.
My podcast is on life support. Hey, I need new listeners.
I want to be the bad boy of public radio, like Elvis Mitchell.
All righty, hello, good morning, and welcome everyone to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I need you to understand something so good. Check it out.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
Coming to you from the Nest Broadcast Center, high in the sky, above Portland, Oregon, where everything seems to be operational right before we were due to start recording the show. The entire internet went out. I don't know if it was just in my apartment or if it was in this entire building or section of Portland, but we appear to be back on track and moving forward here for episode 3,441 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
A kind of amazing thing has been unfolding around the world. Hundreds, if not thousands, of folks involved in criminal enterprises have been arrested over the last couple of days, swept up in something called Operation Trojan Shield. This was the Australian government and their law enforcement arm and the FBI who had distributed a bunch of these crazy encrypted phones to the highest levels and the most secretive corners of the criminal element of the world. But here's the thing.
It's your lucky day. You just found a USB flash drive in the parking lot.
The phones were just sending the information back to the FBI. It's like some real movie plot shit going on with Operation Trojan Shield. So we'll explain and give you some of the dazzling deets from that whole thing. Also, it's a very exciting Wednesday because there was an announcement yesterday regarding a Netflix show.
I've been waiting for this moment for months, and it's finally here.
I Think You Should Leave. Arguably, that's the name of the show. Please, don't put your phones down. Don't pause the show. Don't unsubscribe from what we're doing. The show is called I Think You Should Leave. It's the Tim Robinson, Sam Richardson project. And I think it's arguably the best sketch comedy show in the last, I don't know, 20 years? I don't know what happened 20 years ago that was better, but I'm just saying in a long time. And it's coming back in July.
I'm so excited about this show.
I mean, that's really the announcement. I guess we just did the topic. It's coming back. But I don't know. Maybe we'll find some other ways to to peel that carrot. I don't think that's a saying, but I didn't want to say skin that cat because we love cats on the show. Who would want to do that? I am now freelancing for PETA, by the way, feeding a fed horse, feeding two birds with one scone, and many ways to peel that carrot are all things that I'm just going to start saying. We'll do all that, plus emails and V-mails, and we'll talk to this guy, the longest-running Cobra of the show, maybe best known for his depictions of the tall ships. He is ready to get after it this summer.
I'm a sexy vaccine.
He is Andrew Welsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I was going to try to help you. There are more ways to skip a cap. I don't think that's better than... I skin a carrot, though. Can you just say skin a carrot instead of peel a carrot?
I said peel a carrot. I don't think we talk about carrots as having skin.
Don't we? Maybe not. In our house, we refer to it as carrot flesh, but it's not a normal house.
That embezzled Midwest thing, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I do think that the nice thing about those PETA expressions, not that we have to brainstorm this here, but is that it maintains the sort of integrity of the rhythm and the kind of phonetic sounds, which might be...
Feed a fed horse.
Yeah.
Feed two birds with one scone.
So I sort of feel like you need to skuh something with, if you're going to not skin a cat, maybe skin a carrot. I like skin a carrot. I'm going with skin a carrot until something better comes along.
What about there's more than one way to scrape that tile?
Yeah, that's not bad. Sure.
I'm thinking of when you get a lot of stuff in the grout. What do you recommend for that on Spot List? That has to be a fairly regular topic.
Came up the other day. I don't know. Hannah answered it. It's probably some paste involving baking soda. I'm sure most things do. The thing is, though, I don't use that expression. That's not an expression that even really the original, the one about the felines, which I'm not going to repeat here.
The one about
the
cats, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, I don't think that's ever really come up for me, so it's not something that I have to work around as much.
I think that they say, I think it's also, the cat is usually dead in the expression, right?
Oh, you can't swing.
More than one way to skin a dead cat, right? Isn't that how the phrase went when I was growing up?
I don't know, because now I'm getting confused, because there's another expression, I don't know why we hate cats so much in society, but you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Chipotle, right? Like, that's the expression. Not the part about Chipotle. I added that.
Okay, that's an update.
Yeah, that's an update.
That's version 3.
Yeah, I don't know why I went with Chipotle. I'm
guess
probably
it doesn't
hungry
say,
already.
There's more than one way to skin a cat means there are many ways to do something. There are many ways to achieve a goal. The oldest known use of the phrase dates back to 1854 in the work Way Down East, or Portraitures of Yankee Life by Saba Smith. That's the again. I don't know what's going on with Saba or whoever that was, but yeah, I feel like with our audience in particular and their noted love of cats, and your noted love of cats, Andrew, and my noted love of robot cats, as we learned yesterday on the show.
I was thinking about that after this show,
and my noted side eye at QVC hosts who are about to just absolutely go off on their staff the second that they get off camera.
I got a text from a listener who actually echoes very much how I felt during that conversation, too. I love that you just turned everybody who works at QVC off, kind of off camera. They're all Odells.
Well, I mean, think about it. We have one on this show. There is one off camera person at QVC whose name has ever been uttered. And it was uttered a lot. And very memorably, when the guy hurt himself with the samurai sword. In fact, you know what? Probably should have done this yesterday. We're just going to have to go
air
for
it out.
Here we go.
Yeah,
here we go.
1101, 1816 is the item number on this one. And the nice thing about these practice katanas... Oh! Oh, that hurt.
Every time.
Oh, that hurt big time. A piece of that the tip just got me, Odell. Oh, that got me good.
You all right?
A piece of that tip just got me. Oh,
folks, right now, we may need emergency surgery in the studio.
Odell.
Like, I'm sure this has come up about every couple of years on the show, that tape, and sort of we speculate on it. I wonder how that guy ended up. I wonder if we've actually solved this. Do we know how that guy was afterwards, like medically, like if he was okay, like if they'd have taken him to the hospital? Or I feel like that'd be a great RIP Mel Magazine.
Yeah.
But that would be a great like oral history of that moment.
Yes.
Like Odell talking about what his perspective on it, the guy who was smashing the katana blade that broke. Also, how many swords did they sell?
Yes, yes.
That seems like a pretty bad sales pitch.
How about this as a docu-series? I mean, it begins with, you know, we get to know each one of these characters, like maybe even the first episode. I don't know. Mm. I guess, are we pitching this? Are we pitching this to American public media right now? Yes, we are.
Yes.
Hit record. No,
we're pitching it to Monkey Paw, Wynn's Place. Okay, that's the only major Hollywood studio that we have even the slightest in with.
So, you know, episode one can look at both the background of these two men, you know, where they grew mm-hmm. up, but as individual stories. Maybe even that's two episodes, but I don't want to milk it. That always annoys me when these docuseries do that. And then, you know, it's like, how do they end up at QVC working together? Then we start to get to know them as far as their working relationship is concerned. It's mm-hmm. a great behind the scenes as far as that is concerned. There's a lot of foreshadowing. Of course, all the viewers are listeners or whatever our product here is, they all know what the climax is. It's the sword scene, of course. So we get a background on these swords and the company that makes these swords. And then the aftermath.
You know what? Do one of those real filmmaky things where it starts with the sword being made
yes.
in a factory somewhere overseas.
Forged
and it's just we're following
fire.
This one sword. But the problem is this one doesn't get properly forged, but it just goes into the crate with all the other ones.
We see the crate, like over the credits, like, right? Yes. We see the crate on the ship. It doesn't get stuck in a canal. It just keeps going right through.
It makes it. And there's all these moments where the sword could have gotten quality controlled, but we mm-hmm. see the guy who's standing at the conveyor belt or, you know, the assembly line who's supposed to, like, double check these swords. He, like, get like a fly lands on him, and so he, like, brushes it off his face. He looks away from the lineup of swords for just long enough for this substandard sword to make it through.
Or Laverne puts her glove on the sword on the conveyor belt. I might be mixing properties here. I don't know if we can get the
rights
to that.
I want desperately to go in whatever the thing that Laverne and Shirley say is, but it's going to make the listeners so...
What's it like? I don't know.
Ta-da, ta-da. Da, 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 da. I always want to say Hassenpfeffer, but it's not, because Hassenpfeffer is more from like Bugs Bunny. Remember that Bugs Bunny where the guy wants his Hassenpfeffer? He wants his rabbit foot soup, and he's trying to kill Bugs Bunny. I want my Hassenpfeffer!
I don't know if I do remember that.
Wow.
But I was glad to hear you say it.
In the Midwest where you grew up.
I'm looking up the lyrics.
Weren't making Hassenpfeffer.
Somehow that whatever they say at the beginning is not listed in the official lyrics online.
It's like Shlemiel Shlemazel, something 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 something.
Oh, you know, yeah. According to lyricsondemand.com/TV themes/Laverne and Shirley lyrics.html, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Shlemiel Shlemazel. Hassenpfeffer Incorporated,
what?
We're
no
going to do it. Give us any chance,
Shlemiel,
we'll take it.
Shlemazel, Hassenpfeffer Incorporated. They worked at a place called Rabbit Foot Incorporated?
I guess so.
They bottled beer or something.
Me, I did too. We got to figure
out. Did you watch that show at all as a kid? That seems like something that Bob Walsh would think was maybe fresh or something.
No. I do remember watching it. I don't have... specific memories of the show other than it being on all the time. It was one of those UHF reruns. So I feel like I was familiar with it. But like the Mary Tyler Moore Show, there are episodes that I remember or scenes that I remember. Like I remember when Mary Tyler Moore got audited. I think we've talked about that on the show before.
what a plot.
Yeah, but I think she ended up getting a little flirty with the IRS agent, I think. Or did she use her wiles? I don't know if I'm sexualizing. I thought there was something. Or he asks her out or something. Anyway, I don't remember. I remember Lenny and Squiggy, R.I.P. Squiggy, would come over. I remember them kind of standing in the doorway looking kind of like greasy and lecherous. But, yeah, I don't remember. What was your relationship with the show?
I remember it just being very, very ubiquitous in my childhood. It was definitely mm-hmm. something that I think my parents would think was fresh. Although what's funny is it was like a spinoff from Happy Days or something. Like it's probably unbelievably tame, but it just probably seemed slightly bawdy to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
It was just not something that we would watch in our household. But again, I remember like I just remember it being everywhere and people were talking about it. It was a big – here we go. Here's a little of the original theme song. According to YouTube, although it's it says it's playing, but
one,
here we
two,
go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Shlemiel, Shlemazel, Hassenpfeffer Incorporated.
Give us any chance, we'll take it. Resist any rule, we'll break it. We're gonna make our
so good.
good.
This is a classic theme song,
it's
though, right?
So
like, this
good,
is,
yes.
Like, just so good. I've actually been to more than one hipster rock show where this song is performed unironically.
Oh, really? Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if I were to go back and watch it, if this show would, if it would be as funny as it was rumored to be when I was a kid. Also, by the way, Happy Days. I don't think my parents thought Happy Days was fresh. It was just very early on in my life, and I don't think we had a TV at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was another one where it was like, I knew there was this guy named the Fonz. Even as a child, I remember thinking, that guy seems old to be in high school. Like, I had no context, but I just remember being like, is he supposed to be the same age as Ron Howard?
That's a good point.
That
is he in high
way
school?
Way older.
I always thought, you know, I don't know that I ever pictured him as being one of their classmates. I just pictured him as being this cool older guy who hangs around the diner, but you're right. They're probably supposed to be classmates, huh?
I think, yeah, the Fonz is like the cool guy. What an interesting life and career for one Henry Winkler, mm-hmm. who is, by everything I can sort of assess, maybe the kindest human being on planet Earth. I heard him on Bill Radke's show, The Record, on KUOW a year or two ago. And he was Henry Winkler was talking about this book that he had written and some experience he'd had with someone. And I started crying in my car.
Wow.
Like, it was so moving. Like, Henry Winkler seems like the greatest person on Earth. But if you see Henry Winkler now, and also, by the way, he's great in Barry, the Bill Hader kind of show, where Bill Hader's the hitman who wants to get into like improv theater and Henry Winkler's the acting teacher. Of course, he's amazing as the Bluth family attorney on Arrested Development. Like, that guy's had such a career, but if you look at Henry Winkler right now and you go, that's who I'm going to cast 40 years ago as my bad boy on mm-hmm. the motorcycle who eventually will literally jump the shark. It just seems so – I mean, he's so far removed from whatever the idea of him being the cool bad boy would have been on Happy Days.
I remember Happy Days being on a lot as well. It seemed kind of omnipresent. I don't remember liking it very much. I remember it had a black and white phase, and then it went to color, right? And didn't have two different theme songs. Didn't have Rock Around the Clock for a while, but then maybe it had its own. Or is that the same song? Is Rock Around the Clock and the Happy Days theme the same, or did they start with one song?
I can't believe I'm not
going to
just
play
it, but I'm going to sing it. But the Happy Days theme is Sunday, Monday, Happy Days, Thursday, whatever. Da 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 da. These days are ours. Da 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 da. That's not Rock Around the Clock.
Right. Did they have Rock Around the Clock as the theme for Happy Days for a while, and then they went to color and got their own?
I don't know. Now we're way out of my element, Donnie.
I remember not really liking Happy Days. I didn't find it very relatable. I do remember, you know how I said, like, sometimes there'll be like one show, one episode or one scene that stands out. The thing about Happy Days that stands out, like, if you just wake me up in the middle of the night and say, hey, man, name a Happy Days episode, I'd be like, Fonzie wears a blue shirt. I remember there was an episode where Fonzie wanted to become more of a, you know, just kind of a laid back, not like a cool, sharp guy, but a laid back, kind of peaceful guy. And that uh-huh. was symbolized by him trading in his white classic T-shirt to a kind of a light blue classic T-shirt. And that was the softer side of Fonzie, I believe.
Arthur Herbert Fonzarelli, better known as Fonzie or the Fonz, is a fictional character played by Henry Winkler in Happy Days from 1974 to 1984. He was originally a secondary character, but was soon positioned as a lead character when he began surpassing the other characters in popularity. Mm-hmm. To many, Fonzie is seen as the epitome of cool. Let's see here.
Happy Days change its theme song, by the way. It started with a newly recorded version of Bill Haley and the Comets' Rock Around the Clock. However, for its third season, Rock Around the Clock was replaced with the song Happy Days.
Now, here's the thing. I'm just going to make everybody crazy who loved this show and really knows, like, the lore or canon on Happy Days. But it says these are the occupations that are listed for the Fonz: mechanic, co-owner of Arnold's Drive-In, and high school teacher. Those all seem like things that would put him out of high school.
Yeah.
On the show.
I mean, are we 100% sure that he was ever in high school? Could he have just been a cool older guy in the diner?
Which raises a lot of questions. I mean, do you really want this leather jacket wearing mechanic hanging out with the high school people? If he is in fact a little older, that raises a few salmon colored flags, as you know, Carrie used to say. Like, I don't know. I should just, you know, What I should really do, Andrew, is I should put in some time with TV Land or wherever it is this is currently airing and actually watch an episode or two this week, and then I can report back to you. Wouldn't that be the most TBTL thing? I do a full review of Happy Days.
Like just
in
like
2021.
Okay, is this another? Should we be talking to our bosses? Is this another pitch? Like just a recap?
Do you think this could be some kind of cross promotion with Pineapple Media?
Could we do a recap podcast? I would be deeply uncomfortable doing that. I just thinking back on the show, I don't know why it gave me a bad feeling. Not a terrible feeling, but like I just. For a show that I probably watched a lot of, I don't have good feelings about it. It says here, when Henry Winkler snagged the role, he was 28, but Fonzie was supposed to be a 16-year-old kid. No one Whoa. Is denying that Winkler looked super cool, but most of us will agree that he didn't look like a teenager. This is on something. What am I? Why Happy Days creators were out of their mind to cast Henry Winkler as Fonzie from September of 2020. Monique Dowdy writing for CheatSheet.com.
Now I want to get – so they also – the Wikipedia says that Fonz was ranked by TV Guide as the number 4 on the 50 greatest television characters of all time.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to find that list because I want to see who beat him out.
Yeah, and when was the list made? Is Tony Soprano exactly. on there? Hey, anywhere where's I click the friggin' on it? Okay. Tony Soprano?
Exactly. Where's the gabagool? Let's see. How about this really quickly? The top 10 – television shows. This is weird. TV Guide's 50 greatest TV shows of all time. I can't believe we're delaying the break for me to read this list off Wikipedia. Number 10. Let me get this out. Number 10. Saturday Night Live. It's number 10 all-time greatest TV show. Number 9, The Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, God.
Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 7, The Late Show with David Letterman. Number 6, 60 Minutes. Number 5, The Sopranos. Number 4, All in the Family. Number 3, The Honeymooners. It's funny because he wants to beat her.
Yeah.
Number 2, I Love Lucy. And number 1, Seinfeld.
And Boomer Goes the Dynamite.
Is that a show title, and have we already used that?
I'm not sure. I don't want to be
Please
rude
write
to
that
our
down.
Boomers.
Let's take a break. Will you please write that down? I think that's kind of good. And by the way, peace and love to our boomer listeners, which is 80% of our audience.
Exactly.
But that is you're very right. That is a list that was generated by some folks at TV Guide who are probably themselves boomers and are very much drawing from their lived experience, as would you and I,
Andrew. Exactly. My list would not be super fresh either, for the record. It wouldn't have The Honeymooners on it. This is one of those things, and well, let's go to the break now, but this is where when I tell people that TBTL is all scripted, they simply can't believe it. But it's true. Like, this was all part of the plan today, and this is the part mm-hmm. of the script where I'm supposed to say I'm reading from a script.
The way that you deliver it, though, so in such a naturalistic way, mm-hmm. I think that's what throws the listeners and the various people in online forums speculating, is this scripted or not? It's because it's so deft how you handle it that, and you know, to some degree, I think I pull my weight in that department. I think that's why people can't quite figure it out. And that's why the show is so fresh and fun, 3,441 episodes into it.
I hate the way the writers made me this character, though, where I can't – like, I know who Nicole Kidman is, obviously.
Wait till you find out what they have you doing on Friday.
Oh, no. Am I getting canceled?
We're going to need to have a – we're going to need to have a little offline conversation about that because, yeah, it's it gets weird. All right, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, top stories and so much more here on TBTL.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story, Andrew, I'm freezing right now. See, this is the thing. We in the olden days, well, I guess the break time hasn't changed, but because we're in this kind of little brief period of our broadcast year where we're not doing any of donor messages because we just wrapped up a TBTL-a-thon. Our little kind of first break goes by a little more quickly for you and I as we're kind of setting things up. Mm-hmm. Normally there's enough time for me to make some adjustments or go get more coffee or do whatever. And what I should have done during the break, but I didn't, was I should have gone and turned the air conditioning off.
Oh, well, you can do that. Like you.
No, I'd rather complain about it. I think it's better content.
Yeah,
also,
I'm not trying to rush.
This is what the writers put into the script for me today. So, right. You know, got to do it. This apartment is either stiflingly hot when the sun is beating down on the windows or when I turn the air conditioning on. It's freezing. And I noticed this the other day. I even wrote a tweet about it. I went to get some dinner the other night. And it was a warm-ish day in Portland, and so I had just like a kind of a collared shirt on, but no jacket, because it seemed like it was warm outside. And then I went to sit in this restaurant, which was this Thai restaurant that I like. And the AC was so cold that I was freezing. I had to unroll my sleeves. Like, I had a long-sleeve shirt on that was rolled up to the elbow, because I like to keep it cool and fun and flirty.
Yeah, real John Edwards.
I had to unroll the – that was the only way for me to stay warm, was to try to warm my forearms up by unrolling the shirt, rebuttoning it at the wrist, and also leaving my mask on at all times so as to keep myself warmer.
I know that move.
And that's – I think a lot of our listeners, particularly that live in very warm places, where I guess that a lot of the country right now, it is like they're having record highs for this time of year. It's basically like – just it's very hard to coordinate one's outfit between outside where it's warm and inside where it is frickin' freezing. I'm doing that to myself in my own place of residence right now.
That is odd. Well, you probably did. You wake up kind of hot, so you cranked it.
I went on a jog.
I just heard it. I just heard it too. Like, I don't know what to do about it. Like, just
I went
the
on
writers
a jog.
Put that in there.
I read it. One of them really has it out for you, Andrew. I went on a little jog this morning before the show, and so when I got home, I was overhead, and so I turned the air on. And I'm also going to be in this room doing a lot of stuff today. I got a meeting actually in exactly 42 minutes. That is confirmed, by the way.
Oh, it's actually happening. Okay.
Yeah, I told him I'm going to be running a little late, but I got meetings today and some other recordings, and so I was trying to like get this room at kind of a nice cool temperature, but now it's too cold and I'm shivering. But anyway, we're going to get through this together. And part of what's going to warm the cockles of my heart is excitement over the fact that I think you should leave. Season 2 is coming back. I said I made a bold statement at the top of the show. I said I think it's the best sketch comedy show in 20 years. I'm trying to think. Maybe Key and Peele maybe would give it a run for its money.
God, I love
what do you
Key
think? Is
Peele.
That? Is there anything else that in your mind rivals the kind of comedy phenomenon that was, that is, I think you should leave on Netflix?
Well, here's the thing. Here's my relationship and my take on sketch comedy shows, the ones that I love. I feel like the newest one that I fall in love with is always the best because the medium is evolving and all of these shows are standing on the shoulders of others. So in other words, here's my like brief history of my relationship with sketch comedy. Growing up, you hear about SNL all the time. My parents would like let us watch some of the old ones, but I knew there was something like I knew that sometimes it was too fresh because we weren't allowed to watch all of them. We weren't allowed to watch the new ones. But then, you know, as I become like a tween or a young teen, I'm watching more SNL, and then I discover the Kids in the Hall. Now I'm just like, the Kids in the Hall just seem like the newest, freshest thing. And I still like SNL, but it seems like they're just playing a totally different game as far as just kind of like being, you know, like skits that one runs into the other. They're all kind of connected in some way. Then comes Mr. Show. And I remember when
Yeah.
Devise were first dating and I told her about Mr. Show, which was relatively new at that time. It had probably maybe run its course, but it wasn't like as well known. And I remember telling her, like, this is better than the Kids in the Hall. She was incredulous. She said, nothing is better than the Kids in the Hall. I said, watch this. And then I slowly pushed a VHS tape into a honking machine. And she fell in love with it because it was better. And it's not that the Kids in the Hall wasn't good, but it was just like this was taking some of the things that the Kids in the Hall did and, you know, again, evolving it even more. This idea of one skit, like, kind of bleeding into the next and then, like, the whole – at the end of the show, the whole thing being kind of a full package. So it just goes on from there, and I sort of feel like every time a new kind of show comes out that I love, like I Think You Should Leave, yeah, I'll bet you I Think I Should Leave probably does nail things better than Mr. Show. Ah, God, I mean, I love Mr. Show, but again, like
hard,
a lot of people lay the groundwork. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm. I also think it's kind of interesting because the I think you should leave phenomenon because my memory of it is that it did not like. It took a little while for it to get onto my radar. Like it was. I mean, there are a lot of things that get released on Netflix, and it wasn't. We were not yet in the pandemic, right? I don't think.
No, we were in Australia when you were telling me about it. By the way, I left off Tim and Eric, which is another in that iteration of as things got kind of weirder and whatever. I think Tim and Eric is definitely worth a note. But no, you and I were in Australia. I'll never forget. You had just eaten your first Australian Burger King burger when you were telling me about
Hungry
another
Jack?
Skit. Yeah, you're just wiping the Hungry Jack from your whiskers as you were telling me about another.
Not all of us get food in our face hair, Andrew.
That's come up twice in it. I was actually trying to do a R.R. Martin kind of thing. Whenever he talks about people eating, he's like the grease dripped down his whiskers. Anyway, that's where
I feel like I didn't really. I feel like it had a slow build. Maybe that was just my experience with it, but it just seemed like because Tim Robinson. I guess I would also say this for Tim Robinson and Sam Richardson. And I know that this is a big operation. This show, it's not just the two of them, but I think of them because they collaborated on Detroiters. So I think of it as being kind of their thing. But like Tim Robinson had kind of a failed run on SNL.
Oh, I don't think I remembered that.
Yeah, he was on SNL for like one season. In fact, there was an epic sketch where he plays John Tesh's brother. Who's like John Tesh, played by Jason Sudeikis, and his brother, played by Tim Robinson, are like pitching NBC on the Round Ball Rock theme.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. I didn't know that was him. I probably saw that before I knew who he was.
And yeah, and I forget what the whole bit was, but basically it was actually I think it was probably a little bit like the Bones Are Their Money sketch from I Think You Should Leave. It's where you've got two people that are coming in and presenting. To like you know a company on like a project, one of them's pretty good and one of them's just terrible, mm-hmm. and it's always Tim Robinson who's the just mm-hmm. terrible one. And the other person's trying to kind of help limp them along. But anyway, Tim Robinson, you know, imagine getting on SNL like you're a sketch comedy performer. You get on SNL and then you kind of just like don't really make the impression you were hoping to make. You don't get in enough sketches and then you're just kind of quietly let go. I don't know if I could emotionally handle that. And yet there's a fairly long list of people who didn't kill it on SNL who went on to just be great. Julia Louis-Dreyfus comes to mind. There are lots of them. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But Tim Robinson is one of them. And so now to see him go off and make this other thing. You know what, Andrew? It's a lot like me failing at NPR but then creating TBTL on Cairo at night. In fact, I think that's what a lot of the trades are writing about. They're calling I Think You Should Leave a Luke Burbank second act, a Luke Burbank redemption story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Variety magazine, I believe, is writing about
it. He said,
I know, I
this
really
is where
said
I break out. This is where I break out my House of Mouse Prexy Ankles project
right.
joke that I did like 4 days ago. But no, I mean, it just felt to me like a revelation. Like it was, like, I guess here's what I'm trying to say. It was one of those shows where I was watching it in a hotel room. Maybe we were in Australia. Oh, I feel like a lot of our hotels didn't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
I
think you had already watched it before you came to Australia because I remember you telling me about it like very fervently on the trip. So I think that you
I remember watching it in a hotel room on my laptop and literally crying laughing. Like laughing so hard that tears were streaming down my face and I think I was like tweeting about it as if that mattered or anyone cared. I was just like I had such a strong reaction to it. And then it, just to see the slow build and then to see the, as they like to say in corporate America, the long tail on the thing. Like, I feel like it's still – I also follow on Twitter something called I Think You Should Leave Turbo Feed that just tweets memes mm-hmm. from the show like every day. So I feel like it's been my constant companion for the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
just jokes from that show. Like a day doesn't go by that I don't think of a joke from that show. Maybe we should create a TBTL version of that. Could we write a program or more to the – realistic point, could we get a listener to write a program that just generates great moments in TBTL history via some kind of, I don't know, meme or pull quote? Because I will tell you this, it's really made it so I Think You Should Leave has never left my mind.
Yeah, yep. I follow a similar thing for the old Comedy Bang Bang TV show that's just like, I think it's called like Random CBB or something, and it'll just be like, you know, a still frame or a 30-second clip or something. It's just like, it's this little injection of that show into my life.
Anyway, I'm very, very excited. It's July something. It's coming back. And I'm now worried, Andrew. that there's no way it can live up to my expectations.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. The first time around, I had no expectations. It was just an absolute delight and a surprise. And I've been spending years ruminating on how funny this thing is. And I don't know if... I don't know if there's any way for it to live up to my expectations. There's also that thing of, like, you know, they say everyone has, like, one great screenplay in them. Because usually somebody's first great screenplay or book or novel or whatever is usually something based on their experience. And the reason it's good is because their experience is unique to them, and it's a way of describing events that maybe we haven't thought of before, or the specificity of it is really compelling. When it gets hard is like round two, when you mm-hmm. when you go to write the book that's not just pulled from your experience or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you feel like all the people that worked on I Think You Should Leave had these, like, I don't know what it would have been, 25 great sketches in them. Everybody brought their best sketch they'd had in their back pocket since UCB or SNL or wherever they were doing. Now I wonder what they're going to do for round two, because they've kind of – they've kind of gotten all of their gems, all of their little chestnuts out of their system. Now what's left?
Yeah. I worry that the copy machine has gotten everybody a little bit too excited, honestly.
Santa came early.
That might be my,
that was one of the main, yeah. by the way, one of the main memes going around when they announced season two was...
Oh, really?
Patty Harrison.
Oh, yes.
Freeze frame of Patty Harrison just yelling, Santa came early.
Oh, God. I love that so so much. I still, that's still my only reference for her, that and Twitter. She's profanely hilarious.
Oh,
on
my
Twitter
God.
As
she
well.
Is the dirtiest follow on Twitter. Party Harderson.
So
children
much.
Who are listening to this, do not
no.
go follow Party Harderson on Twitter, because it is not time for that in your life yet. But
it's
no,
fresh.
She's great. I want, but then again, it's like the question is, okay, is she going to show up on season two, and is she going to be that character again? And what can they have her getting kind of, you know, worked up about? Like, everything was just so kind of like, is the hot dog guy going to do something else that's obviously him? I think they're too smart for that. I think that they're yeah. probably too smart to bring back any of those iconic characters and just have them in another situation.
I agree.
I don't know. I guess we'll all find out together.
We'll find out. It doesn't seem like everything I know of him, it doesn't seem like that's what he wants to do. You know, a lot of people actually, especially people who've had who've drinking a tiny bit from the SNL, well, I think go on to create their own projects because they don't want to be SNL. Like, I know that, I think that was a driving principle of Mr. Show when Bob Odenkirk left SNL. He's just like, I want to create the opposite experience. And some of that was kind of behind the scenes pressure and attitude. But I don't see Tim Robinson as somebody who just wants right. to kind of rehash things. If he's had other projects he could rehash. He could still be at SNL, maybe. But, like, you know, I loved The Detroiters. I was late to that show. But before you fell in love with this show, I had fallen in love with The Detroiters, which I think is only two seasons. I could be wrong about that. And definitely worth a rewatch, by the way. I should go back and watch that. And I loved the dynamic between him and Sam Richardson. And I thought that Sam Richardson would have more of a breakout. Like, he would be more of a household name than Tim Robinson. Because he ended up being on Veep or whatever. But together, they're just so great. Love to get my hands on that handle. Anyway, so, like, he didn't come out with a season three of Detroiters, or if the Detroiters were canceled, they didn't, like, try to come up with the same thing. He came up with something totally different. Also, this is just like the garnish on the side of the plate, but like the style and music of the quick interstitials of I Think You Should Leave, the kind
beautiful.
Of retro throwback,
it's
kind
very
of 70s
like,
color schemes,
yes.
so amazing.
And almost like, I don't know if we use this guy's name in Polite Company, but sort of Phil Spector wall of sound at times, like has a very kind of Motown, not like, I guess early Motown sometimes, depending on, you know, the particular interstitial, but you're right. And also, by the way, the visuals.
Yeah.
Like just the kind of art of those lines moving around and then the music. That was, I'd forgotten about that, but that's a whole other little just kind of, like you would say, Andrew, lanyap
yeah,
of entertainment.
Beautiful design. And so, again, like it felt like that show just has so much attention to detail. I just don't think that he's going to be like, well, everybody liked the hot dog guy. Let's do the hot
right.
dog guy again. I feel
what
like
can he crash into this time?
Yeah.
No,
right.
I think you're right. And also, I mean, I hadn't thought about it this way, but you're totally right with the SNL model where, like, obviously SNL is – well, we just saw it's ranked in the top five of
yeah.
TV Guide's greatest television shows
right behind
of all time.
Behind Honeymooners.
So. You can't argue with that. But, like, that's really the formula on SNL is you try all of these characters. If you're lucky, you get one of them on TV. And if you're really lucky, it takes off. And if you're really lucky, 6 years later, you're doing Opera Man.
Yeah, right.
And everyone's like, everyone starts cheering when they see you in the cape. And I'm not saying that to run down Adam Sandler, who I think has actually had a really robust career. Even though not everything he does is for me, and he might be a low-key Republican, I still like, you know, I'm not like anti-Adam Sandler at all. In fact, I thought his stand-up comedy special was really good that he put out a few years ago. And I love him in Uncut Gems.
I knew he released a stand-up special a couple of years ago.
It's good, by the way.
How did we not
like,
talk
would,
about that?
We probably did.
Yeah.
It was
it was right after we talked about the seagulls attacking.
That's lost to the history of our minds. No, it's his stand-up special is actually pretty genius because, of course, it's all pre-pandemic, and it's the intercut between a bunch of performances that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's visually interesting, and it keeps it moving. It's not just like he comes out on stage at Radio City Music Hall, and then he's just like pacing the stage, yeah, like, you know, a caged animal, like wowing the crowd. It's like him trying these things out. Like, I think the opening bit, it's like him in rehearsal, and then they're just in the song that he's playing. They're cutting between all these different places where he's played the same song.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
It keeps it actually visually very interesting. He sings a song about Chris Farley that is shockingly moving. Like, you don't expect it to be as powerful as it is, and you don't see it coming necessarily. And, yeah, I mean, he's just like very – I mean, Adam Sandler's a very, very gifted performer, so I'm not trying to drag him with the Opera Man thing. But it is that – people who have been on SNL, they talk about it in terms of being like the best thing that ever happened to their career, something that they feel so lucky – that they got to do, something they'll never forget, and also something that almost killed them.
Yeah, right.
Like, almost drove them to an early grave. That's always how everyone talks about that place. And I would imagine some of it is because one of two things is happening. Either you're not getting on the show enough, and you're feeling constantly like you're about to get fired, or you're out there doing your quote-unquote hit character for the upteenth time, trying to find some way to make Hans and Franz seem interesting to people. Like, there must be a point at which when you've performed the same character 15 times on that show where it's not as sort of creatively rewarding.
And also you get the impression, and again, like, I'm the last person who should be talking about this because I just know there, I mean, people who are actually close to it, and then there's just like all the comedy nerds who actually study this shit, and I've just kind of heard bits and pieces, but also just sounds like it's a, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff can get kind of nasty. You're either on the inside or the outside, and you can, you know, I think Pete Davidson has – is it Pete Davidson? Yeah, I think he's talked about this a bit, and just, like, having to crawl your way in and it being clicky. And, of course, I don't – you know, that the casts change, you know, every few years or whatever. But still, like, I just get the impression that there's a culture there of, like, you're either on the inside or you're on the outside trying to, you know, claw your way in, and it can be very unpleasant in that way as well.
Yeah. So anyway, looking forward to that. Of course, I'm sure we'll give it a full review 12 years from now, which is kind of that's our cycle for things. Like, we just got to Happy Days today.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we'll get to that when we get to it.
Are we doing Mama's Family tomorrow? Ask the writer.
We're doing Evening Shade. Oh my God. I don't think I understood that Mama's Family, Vicki Lawrence was playing both, I think, you know, Vicki Lawrence in her normal look and then also Mama.
Yeah, I didn't either. I totally did not get that
like
show.
I did not put it together that was the same character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Same person, I should say.
Yeah, I did not get that show at all. It's another one that I didn't like. I kind of got it confused with a Beverly Hills. Not confused with, but I sorted it out in my mind as the kind of a Beverly Hills.
Well, because Vicki Lawrence as Mama and Irene Ryan as Granny, there are some similarities there.
I think you're right.
Plain-spoken older gal from the South, etc. Hey, I should start by saying anytime that – it's very rare on this show that we talk about something that involves law enforcement. It's not really our lane. And I want to say that it's like everything that we know about this thing called Operation Trojan Shield is what the law enforcement agencies have told us about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I should be careful about getting too sort of like, I don't know, high five about everything that they did. But I have to admit, if they are to be believed, this thing was pretty bad A. Did you read about this or hear about this at all yesterday?
No, this is the first I'm hearing about it.
So what basically happened was at some point this thing called EncroChat was taken down, which was EncroChat was an encryption, I'm going to say an encryption program or encryption operation that like a bunch of the like biggest criminals in the world were using, because it obviously couldn't be tracked by law enforcement. But then they finally got a hold of it and they cracked it or they shut it down or whatever. And so there was kind of a vacuum with all of these like super criminals where they didn't have their, like, I guess for some reason they don't even use like, what's that one, Signal?
Mm-hmm.
That everybody, why am I taking this here at this moment? It's always funny to me when someone is a reporter and their beat is like seemingly pretty, like, I would just say not overly fraught with danger. Like they cover, I can't think of a good example. And then their Twitter page will be like, Signal me, DM me through Signal. And I'm like, easy, Woodward and Bernstein. You cover like housing policy. Like, now I guess you could make the argument if somebody felt like their landlord was mistreating them and they didn't feel comfortable texting a reporter, they could use Signal. But there became this thing for a while. Just look for it now, and you'll notice where like certain reporters who are very important and deal with very important things would have, here's my Signal handle in their Twitter bio so that people could reach out to them, because they're just like, they're just so busy raking the muck and speaking truth to power that they need you to Signal amp them, even though their beat is small business or something.
Although,
but anyway.
Yeah. Every example you give, though, but then I don't get stuck on that. Every example you give, I'm like, oh, yeah, but no, if you were working for a small business and you needed to leak something, I'd probably want to use Signal, too. So
yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. It is always – I guess I was on a few people who I thought, it seems like you might be taking yourself in this beat a little bit seriously.
I dig the vibe of what you're saying.
It became a little bit of a way of letting the other reporters know that you are a real reporter, I think, at some point. That was how I read it, but also I'm a broken, angry man sitting in a apartment – talking to his friend about Happy Days. So there's a lot of my own bullshit that's probably woven into
that. I will say, if anybody wants to reach out to me with their own theories on Happy Days, do hit me up on Signal.
What if you started a Signal account just for people to send you Happy Days thoughts,
and
thoughts on Arthur Fonzarelli?
And Mama's Family.
Oh, my God. Andrew, please put that tweet out. It will only be funny to me and the five people listening, but if you just put a tweet out that was like, we're doing some reporting on Mama's Family, and we're looking to, if you or anyone you know worked on Mama's Family, here's my Signal account, DM me.
Do what I have to create. I'm trying to think. I haven't tweeted. I was going to say, when's the last time I tweeted? And I bet you a million times it is about baseball.
Probably.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah,
okay, so basically what happened was they started taking down all these encryption systems. I want to say system because I don't know if it's an app or if it's – I don't actually know how to accurately describe it. But the FBI and other Interpol and other agencies were having some success at getting rid of these encryption programs that the super criminals were using. And so there was sort of a vacuum. One of the ones that they had hacked was called Phantom Secure. They got rid of this one called Phantom Secure. And this is what was very smart, though. They recruited a former Phantom Secure distributor who had been developing a new encrypted communication system. This system was called ANOM, A-N-O-M. So they went to the person, like found the guy or person. I don't actually know their gender. They found the person who had been in charge of this thing called Phantom Secure, which they had broken up. And they went to this person and they said, we'll give you $120,000 if you work with us. And this person said, okay. And so they then had this person write this new cool encryption thingy in such a way that they could monitor what was going on with it. And then they got a bunch of these cell phones, which I guess this is the most like James Bond, like cool supervillain part of this, Andrew. These cell phones had been stripped of all normal functions. The only working app was disguised as the calculator function. After entering a code, users could send messages and photos with end-to-end encryption. So you got to buy this phone through some like super dark web, right? And they're like expensive too. I don't have not mentioned here in the article, but I forget what the phones cost. They made like 12,000 of these phones. And so you buy one of these phones on the dark web, and then you get it, and it's like crazy encrypted, has nothing on it except a calculator function, which you can then open up, and then in there you can send your messages and things. So they get 12,000 of these phones out in circulation with the super criminals. There's this one dude. He's this Australian whose family was from Turkey. His name is Joseph Hakan Ayık, or Ayık. And he's known as like the Facebook mafia king. Like, cause he's all over Facebook flashing all his cash and his fancy cars and his life as this like super criminal. And he, you want to talk about being on, like, forget the FBI's most wanted list. He is on the criminal's most wanted list because he got one of these phones and started using this Anom app, and he turned on all the other super criminals
It.
He was the guy that was like, can I tell you about my candle business? Could I please come over? Could I have a few minutes of your time to come over and tell you about Avon? Like, he got all the other super criminals in on this Anom and these phones. He was like, this is working out great for me. And so the law enforcement, be it the Australians or the Americans, they ended up intercepting – the number is like insane. It's like 27 million messages. So every time these criminals would be communicating over these phones using this app, it was going to the frickin' FBI.
That's a really good plan.
It's such a good plan, right? And like, they could get down to the granular level where it'd be like, this one cartel was, or syndicate, they were bringing cocaine from like Costa Rica to Spain. And they're like texting away about it. Let's put it in the pineapple. So they're like hollowing out pineapples and putting cocaine in it. They talk about the ship and which one it's going to be on, da da da, all the stuff. Ship shows up in Spain. The, Interpol, whoever it is right there. They grab the ship. All the cocaine's in the pineapples. These criminals must have been like, WTF. Like, every, like, the cops were like always one step ahead of them. It's because all of the messages were going to law enforcement, which, again, I'm not usually super pro a lot of the tactics that law enforcement uses. But in this case, I got to admit, this is some real James Bond shit.
It's did the story get into when they decided to kind of blow the whole thing up? Because once you have a system like this that is working
right.
So well, I know the push and the pull becomes how much do we use it? And if we use it too specifically, then, you know, somebody may be onto the fact that we have some sort of system, and then people might realize, hey, we got to stop using these calculator phones or what have you. And now, of course, now that it's big headlines, the whole operation is blown up, and then they have to start over if they want to, you know, because everybody's going to shift tactics on both sides now.
Yeah, that's a great question. Like, when did they decide that there was more benefit in swooping in and arresting? By the way, they are in Australia. The effort ensnared domestic and international organized crime groups and outlaw motorcycle gangs. Mm. That's kind of crazy. Like, you got this like outlaw motorcycle gang that's also got this encrypted phone they're using to send things. You'd feel like those would just be different worlds. Also, if you're an outlaw motorcycle gang, don't do crimes. That's too on brand.
Well, then you would just be an in-law motorcycle gang.
I just think, like, I mean, where's the first place they're going to go looking if some bad stuff's going on? How about the outlaw motorcycle gang?
Right. Well, what if your motorcycle gang wears blue t-shirts instead of white t-shirts, like the Fonz? When he
hit the jukebox. Punched a soda machine and got an extra soda.
Nice.
They 200 people were arrested in Australia. In Sweden, police arrested 155 people on suspicion of these crimes. Let's see. There's other stats in this somewhere. They got a bunch of people in this. Oh, Europol said in addition to the 800 arrests, including a handful of law enforcement officers, operations conducted in the past days in 16 countries have led to 700 house searches, the seizures of tons of drugs, firearms, 55 luxury vehicles, and $48 million in currencies and cryptocurrencies. So, yeah, they must have decided that either the criminals, some of them were getting wise to it, were beginning to suspect it, or that they just were at a point where they could get so many people that they it was just worth it to basically burn this resource or this thing that they had set up, which was this crazy system. I mean, I got to admit, though, like, now if you're a criminal, what are you going to do? Like, any of these encrypted things, you're going to – I don't know. I'm not, like, rooting for the criminals, because even though I think drugs should be decriminalized, the collateral damage – from these drug operations, just the human misery that happens as far as people being killed and threatened and menaced is obviously really terrible, particularly in places like Mexico and stuff. But, man, if you're one of these criminals now, it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to always be thinking that any communication system you're using is maybe actually the FBI.
Yeah, the psychological impact of it, it actually is another win for law enforcement in that case.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was a pretty rad, pretty – I mean, this is definitely going to be a movie or a TV show on FX, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. People are in meetings today. Today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right. Any emails or V-mails, my friend, that are of note today?
I got one here from Bruce. I haven't actually screened this, but this is interesting because I have a vague recollection of this, too. So we're talking about computer dating and how far back in history it goes. And Bruce says, I have a vague recollection of computer dating being a regular fixture on 60s and 70s sitcoms. Bruce, this is not a show where we talk about sitcoms from the 1960s and 70s. I mean, where do you get these ideas?
What how are we supposed to get more listeners if the if the current listeners keep dragging us back into television from the 70s and 80s?
Oh, I'll tell you what, Bruce. How about we just do a whole show on Happy Days? Oh,
hey.
Yay. Anyway, Bruce. Sorry, Bruce. I don't know why I'm coming at you so hard. Bruce says, here is a clip of Stiller and Mira. Of course, this is Jerry Stiller and Ann Mira. We've talked about them on the show. Classic, classic comedy duo. And this is from
Ben Stiller's parents, for what it's worth.
And this is from, and I swear I've seen this before. This is from an early, early, like black and white episode of Johnny Carson. Let's take a listen to this. I can't remember where this goes.
This is them pretending to be computer daters.
Yes, this is them just standing on stage, you know, kind of doing a bit on stage on the old Johnny Carson soundstage. Here we go.
Thank you very much. Recently, there's been a lot of talk about computers in the newspapers. They've even managed to date people with the help of computers. So Jerry and I would like you to meet a couple who have been ideally matched by a computer, and they meet for the very first time.
See if they're getting into character.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'm Hershey Horowitz.
I'm Mary Elizabeth Doyle.
So the joke there being
very
they matched
different
up a very Jewish person with a very like Protestant person, or at least a very non-Jewish person.
Yeah.
Doyle.
Horowitz.
Horowitz. H-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z. Hershey. My friends call me Hesh.
Doyle. D-O-Y-L-E. My friends call me Mary Elizabeth.
Is Doyle your real name?
Sure. Why wouldn't it be my real name?
I don't know. I mean, I was just hoping you...
No, we're Doyles. We're Dempseys on my mother's side.
Dempsey.
Horowitz.
Schmullowitz on my mother's side. this computer's a very good thing.
Oh, terrific.
I was reading all about it.
It takes all the guesswork out of meeting someone.
Yeah.
Electronics, so you can't make any mistakes.
There it is. I've seen that before.
I think, but see, I don't know why this. I'm like obsessed with trying to be right on this related to Computer Love by Zapp. Also, can we stop talking about music from the 80s, Bruce?
Yeah, Bruce, you're dragging us down.
My sense of what people are like, I've said now way too many times on the show, including a lot in the last couple weeks, that I think it's interesting that this funk band from the 80s was writing about the fact that people were going to find love on computers. But they have lines in the song like, is this your face I see on my computer screen? Which calls to mind much more like what we would do now, right? Where you get matched with someone on a computer or on a phone at this point. And what I think computer dating from this era was, and even the era that a different listener referenced about her parents meeting, was the computer was trying to figure out compatibility. Like you listed all of your interests on probably on a punch card, and they fed it into a computer, and they fed in a whole bunch of people's information, and then the computer was supposed to say, based on compatibility, here's who should be matched up with whom. Hence the joke of Stiller and Mira of being like, those are people who might seem mismatched.
And whereas, our listener's like, real life experience where she said her parents, while they were happy, seemed like a weird match.
Right. But it's still, I think of, it sounds to me like computer dating in the early days was more like the computer is going to sort through a whole bunch of people for you and find the person who you're most compatible with, as opposed to what Zap was writing about, which was finding love on this computer, sort of virtual space. But I'm still fascinated with this idea that people were turning to these very, very rudimentary computers in those days to try to find love.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel like bickering about it because it doesn't really matter to me. I'm not as blown away by it. I also don't know the lyrics of Computer Love, and this is a song that's closer to your heart, so that's why doesn't really matter whether or not I weigh in on it. But I guess my mind isn't quite as blown on it because, I mean, you look at any kind of like, you know, Philip Dick was writing about things that would come true technologically and culturally. I mean, you know, people were able to fantasize about like, okay, if going back to the 1960s and 70s, people were using punch cards and experimenting with relationships using computers. I don't think by the early 1980s, the idea of writing a song about finding romance on a computer is, you know.
Right. But I would say the difference is Philip K. Dick didn't write, "Do I Diddy Blow My Thing."
Are you sure?
I would say, you know what? 3 days ago, I would have said 100%, but I've really started questioning myself, Andrew.
I'm on Wikipedia right now.
I'm 98% sure that he didn't write that song, and that's why I'm just, again, and then I'll stop. I will literally never bring this up again. But what I think is so interesting is, yeah, like there were people who were amazing futurists and sci-fi writers and people that could really imagine a future version of the world, and none of them were as talented at making music as Zap was. Zap was both good at making this music that I really like and just weirdly ahead of the curve, it would seem, to be on this one thing. But I've said – I says it to you and I leaves it to you is where I'm going to end the conversation on that. I will never bring it up again.
Yeah, and by the way, you're kind of talking – like I'm not pushing back on you. I mean, you have this song has made you have these thoughts. I don't think that's – it doesn't make me have the same thoughts, but I don't know the song as well. And also, like, I'm not saying, like, if this is becoming something like you think that I or the listeners are saying you are wrong, I don't think that's the tone.
No, I don't think anyone's saying, I don't think anybody's saying that I'm not feeling called in by the listeners on this. I'm just still, my mind was so blown when I heard about computer dating from one of the listeners that it was going on in the 60s and 70s. And I had so many questions. And as we've gotten more information about it, what I've been able to wrap my mind around is that it seems like it was more of a thing where the computer was just sorting lots and lots and lots of different people and then saying this person would be a good match with this person. That's because I was like, how could any of it work? There was no internet. And it's because I was thinking of computer dating in those days as being like computer dating would be now, and it wasn't. It was a kind of a different animal, if you will.
I'm trying to think of a good computer all I can think of, and I feel like I lean on this too much, is that is that Robin's song Fembots. Is there another good like robotic or computery kind of song that we can go out with that you would like to hear?
Let me see, hold on, I'm gonna put in computer. I know computers and robots are not the same, but let's see, because I could also look up robot. We have we've got anything off of OK Computer.
I was already looking through that. It's like, I don't know that well enough, and a lot of those are just so kind of somber sounding, or at least start off that way. Unless you know
why don't we just go out with a different – why don't we just go out with a different Robin song? I, Andrew, had occasion this weekend because, you know, Portland is opening back up, and I had occasion to go out to a bar where they actually had legal karaoke. They had half of the bar – I can't believe I didn't talk about this on Monday because my mind was so blown. They had basically a big section of the bar where you had to prove you were vaccinated and you got a wristband. Mm. And if you were vaccinated and if you had a wristband, you could be in this part of the bar maskless.
So did you bring your cards or did you just find out when you showed up and so you said
I did not bring my card. So I was like kind of on the periphery. But I saw this going on and a couple of things. One, 21-year-olds are so young.
Andrew. Yeah, I know. I know,
what?
Buddy.
The actual, like, all I could do was sit there and marvel at the age of people who are allowed in bars.
Yeah, I know.
These Addy would be like these kids. Like, I don't go to bars typically where there are younger people hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I go to a bar, it'll usually be something that's a little bit more on the divey end. Mm-hmm. It kind of has its own vibe. You and I both tend to like the same kind of places. I dig this place, my father's place here in Portland, a lot. Nobody, please come find me there because you probably won't like what you see. You'll see an old man playing online Keno or playing, you know, Oregon State Lottery Keno while low-key controlling the jukebox through touch tunes. But
I like that.
So anyway, I don't usually go in places where there are a lot of young people. This was sort of, I think, the first weekend, too, where you started to see people coming back out to things really large numbers. And I was just struck by the whole scene. I just hadn't been around anything like that, even pre-pandemic. I just am not in a bar where, let's say, 80% of the patrons are under the age of 25.
Yeah, yeah.
Just couldn't believe how young these young people were. And also, I was very interested in what their music – I didn't do karaoke, obviously, but I was very curious about what their musical selections would be, what music would resonate with them. And one of the songs that people just went off for was Dancing on My Own by Robin.
Okay. Want to go out with that?
Which I was surprised by because that song is from like our era.
Yeah, it was like kind of before Robin reinvented herself, you mean, right? Because do I have that right? Like Robin was famous in the 90s, right? And then kind of was a sleeper for a while and then kind of reemerged in the 2010s maybe?
As being like Show Me Love, which was more sort of like white soul or sort of more R&B infused. That was how she came to the awareness of many people in the U.S. And then at some point she came back with – like Dancing on My Own to me is post-reinvented Robin.
Mm.
Kind of more techno, more dance, more like – I don't know what you'd even call her music, but it definitely seemed, because like I remember when she came out with Show Me Love and I was like, oh, this is the kind of music she makes. And then Dancing on My Own seemed like a departure. I don't think I even knew that song, honestly, when it came out. I think Vanessa loved it and like other people that were hip and cool were like, oh, you're not into Robin? And I was like, the lady who sings Show Me Love? Mm. But I was shocked that these young people were vibing to Dancing on My Own. And then I was looking at TikTok the other day and I saw it on there and I was like, aha.
It says here that Robin, the song Dancing on My Own, actually goes back to the 1960s.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, there's a Stiller and Mira piece about it that I could play for you, or we could just go out with the song.
It was Robin Hershkowitz, right? That was her name before just changed it to Robin. All right. If we can go out Dancing on My Own. It was – oh, I got to say too, Andrew, for all the caveats I offered or all the like little – I can't believe how old I am and how young people are. That place packed out – by the way, it was the 21st Avenue Pub in Portland, which is great. 21st Avenue Pub is great. And just that whole room full of young people jumping up and down and singing full-throated to Robin Dancing on My
energy.
Own. It was life-affirming.
Yeah, you needed that.
Yeah. All right, thanks, everyone. That's the show for today. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Till then, have a great Wednesday. Take care of yourselves, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
power out.